the Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. And what more could we want than a more just and a more compassionate world in this Easter season? I was impressed, and maybe I'll talk even a little bit more about it without giving you my Easter sermon, that what Paul says to the Corinthians is, get rid of the old yeast of maliciousness and wickedness and substitute sincerity and truth. Well, you know, that's really kind of simple. It's not overly complicated. And a lot of the mystery of the resurrection could be complicated. Jesus died, raised from the dead, all of that. That's really hard. But sincerity and truth, that's pretty understandable. It may not be easy to do. I'm not saying that. But it should be pretty easy for us to figure out that that's how we should be living our lives. And what Paul says to those Corinthians in that first century is, that's part of the Easter story, to remake the world in the image of the risen Jesus. And if we put sincerity and truth there, then we can make the world more like an Easter world in which there's transformation of those things that are bad into those that are good, those things that are dead into those things that are alive. So as I said to you, I'm not going to give you my Easter sermon, but I thought that that's a wonderful way to begin our Easter week Just Love show. And, you know, but I do have to remind everybody that Easter is not a day, but it's a season. We know Lent's 40 days, but we don't too often kind of recall that Easter is 50 days, and we celebrate the mystery of the new life of Jesus for 50 days, and little secret, even beyond that. We celebrate that new life until his kingdom come. And so I am delighted that as we begin this Easter season, we're still in the octave of Christmas. Those first 8 days have a specific kind of robustness to them in the way that we kind of celebrate the new life of the resurrection. I am delighted that we are going to be speaking about an experience that somebody had and somebody does in order to make our world more just and more compassionate. We're going to be speaking about a project of helping people in the Sudan, and we're going to speak about that reality of a doctor who undertook such great individual effort to make people's lives better, Dr. Tom Katainer. And our first guest is going to be Ken Carlson, who is the director, the producer of Carlson Films, and he was the independent filmmaker who put together and created the movie The Heart of Nuba. So I am delighted that in this Easter season, Ken Carlson is with us. Ken Carlson, thank you for joining us on Just Love.
It's an absolute pleasure. Happy Easter Monday.
Okay. And Easter Tuesday, and Easter Wednesday, and Easter Thursday, and Easter Friday, and Easter Saturday, and the second Sunday of Easter too, because it's 50 days that we have for this, for the celebration of the Easter season. And I know in parts of the country in this past week, we even had some Easter snow. But you know what I said? Everybody said, well, snow for Easter. And I said, well, wait a minute. It's white. And the color of Easter is white. So it's not a white Christmas, but it's a white Easter. So anyway, so Ken, thanks so much for being with us. So let's get right into it.
Thanks for having me on.
Delighted that you're going to be with us. So tell us a little bit about this, you know, maybe before we go to it, we're going to play a little clip from The Heart of Nuba, and then we're going to talk about what this whole film is about. So let's play just a short clip from it.
The Nuba people, if I left, some people would die. So I'm in it. I'm all in.
Dr. Tom. He's the gynecologist, the physician, he's surgeon, he's everything.
And he does that 365 days a year. That's really the issue that makes him remarkable.
Yeah, this is Rita. Rita has a pediatric tumor of the kidneys. The chances of a really good outcome are not great.
At Brown University, Tom Katainer was an all-Ivy nose guard and an all-American.
Football is a metaphor. A lot of medical work is intensity and perseverance.
Katainer's action for a safety!
I decided to go into medicine. Before you know it, you end up in the mountains of Sudan. A
So, Ken, just for our listeners, and help me too, Nuba, a people, a country, a place, a made-up name? It almost sounds a little bit like science fiction, but is Nuba real?
Yeah, don't feel bad that you don't know where the Nuba Mountains are located. I did not before I got involved in the project 5 years ago. I knew my buddy, Dr. Tom Katina. By the way, we played football together. We were classmates together at Brown University, class of 1986. So I'd been following him, but I did not know that he was in this particular part of the world. So don't fret if you don't know where the Nuba Mountains are located. I will tell you.
Okay.
As I learned 5 years ago, they're located in the southern part of Sudan, and Sudan, of course, is in the northeastern part of Africa. And so this area is a part that they were expecting to in 2011. Be part of the secession of the country that was made up South Sudan. So the youngest country in the world is South Sudan. This part of the world is in the southern part of Sudan that was left in Sudan. And that is, in fact, the reason why there's a conflict, because these people were expecting to have their freedom and leave Sudan, leave the genocidal maniacs, territory. This is Omar Hassan al-Bashir that I'm talking about. So this is a part of the world that's been under conflict for many, many years. And Dr. Tom Katina is the sole doctor for about 1 million people in this war-torn part of the world. So he is literally doing God's work there. And I can tell you, after being there several times, it is one of the toughest things that you could do in your lifetime, to put yourself in a position like that. But he does it because he has compassion, and because he feels like this has been put on his heart by our Lord and Savior. So it's been for me the most incredible purpose in my life to shed some light on this on this story.
So to listeners, I'll give you a little bit of background, which is very, very, very simplistic. But you may remember a number of years ago, we've had guests on who have spoken to us about the situation in the Sudan and the division between, I know this is not technically right, but I'll say it this way, northern Sudan and southern Sudan. And as in so many parts of the world, one of the issues there is oil and where the oil is located, but then where it's refined, and how do you share the revenues between places that were there. And I would say to people's surprise, when they had the kind of referendum and when the separation occurred, oh, maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, I'm not exactly sure now, it went a little bit better, at least initially, than people thought it was going to go. But things like that don't oftentimes last. So there's a geopolitical conflict there. And as always, as Ken Carlson pointed out, whenever you have a situation like that, it's always the poorest of the people in a country who wind up suffering. So that's a little bit of background for listeners. I know it's not very complex and it's not very deep and it's not very nuanced, but that's what we're talking about. And we're talking about a part of that, the Nuba Mountain area, in which there's an incredible amount of suffering. And this is where Dr. Tom Katina is doing his ministry, doing his service. So, Ken, if I said anything wrong there, please correct me.
No. It is primarily a resource-driven conflict, but it is also racial. But this has been going on for, honestly, it's been going on for centuries. There's been turmoil in this part of the world. But suffice to say that he gave up. Omar Hassan al-Bashir, the president of Sudan, gave up about 72-75% of the oil revenues when South Sudan became an independent state. And he wants whatever he can get. And so he's holding on to this band, this strip of land, which is the Blue Nile State and the Nuba Mountains, for the resources. And you know, it's a very fertile land as well. I mean, you go to Khartoum, which I've been, and it's a dustbin. You can't plant much there. You can't harvest, and there's not a lot of oil. This part of the world there is. So he's holding on for dear life, and he's wreaking havoc there and trying to discourage the people that live there, oppressing them as best as he can, discourage them so they leave, and then he can push his troops in and take over. But the rebels, the SPLA, and people like Dr. Tom Katina will have none of it.
So, Ken, so let's get a little bit down. How did, a guy who played football, guy who is a doctor, grew up in the United States, how did Dr. Tom Katina even learn about the Sudan, and how did he get involved? Give us a little bit of that story.
Yeah, well, it's this is a man that is all in whatever he does, and I played football with him. I was not only on the same team; I was on the same defensive line. And Tom was a nose guard. He was all American. I was a linebacker, an outside linebacker. I was not. He was the most incredible football player I've ever seen, ever played with. And if you know anything about football, a nose guard is one that sacrifices greatly for the good of the team.
The other thing, I'm sorry, Ken. The other thing I also know a little bit about football. Brown is not Alabama.
No, and that's the other thing. Those two terms do not live in one sentence.
Normally. Right, they don't.
Brown University, Ivy League, right. And All-American. So just understand that. But here is a guy that's a nose guard. Nose guard on the defensive line. They fire out every play. Every play is about a collision, and there's no glory. Right. This is what he is doing in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan. There's no glory. He does the work. He fires out every single play.
So where did he go to medical school?
He went to Duke University. Okay. So when he graduated from Brown, he had an engineer major, and then he decided he felt the push to go into medicine. He felt like that was his purpose, and so he entered the Navy and gave him several years, and then in return, the Navy paid for his medical degree at Duke University. He did his internship, residency, I should say, in Indianapolis, and then he laid it out in front of God and said, "What should I do with my life?" And he felt God's calling to go to Africa and to work in Africa. So he went to Nairobi and he worked there, perfected his surgical craft, and then he went into the rural part of Kenya, and then he had the calling to go to Sudan. And before he knew it, as he says in the film, "I'm in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan." And let me tell you something, Kevin, he has been there now for over 10 years. And this is one of the most difficult areas in the world to live, and not only to live, but to work, and to not only work, but to do some of the trickiest, the most difficult surgery in the world. We like to say he's the last line of defense for people healthcare wise, and it's overwhelming when you go there and see what he's doing.
So we're speaking with Ken Carlson, who is a director, producer, independent filmmaker with Carlson Films, and we're talking about the work of Dr. Tom Katena, who is a doctor, maybe the doctor, in a certain part of Sudan, and we're talking about his work. But Ken, so give our listeners just a kind of a bird's eye view. Is so when he gets up in the morning, and I know you mentioned that he prays every day, but after he prays, so what does one doctor do in that part of the world? What's his day look like?
Yeah, every day, I just got to let you know, because I filmed this, and it was just remarkable. Tom gets up without an alarm clock, after being woken up several times during the night because there are needs in the hospital. Keep in mind, there are 435 beds, usually two people in every bed, and in the pediatric ward, sometimes three. So he's woken up all night long, but he wakes up at 5:30, eyes wide open, and he walks to the chapel, and he centers himself, focuses on saying the rosary and centering himself. And then he has a little chapel service for a half hour. So he's there for 1 hour. That's where he focuses. That's where he gets his motivation for the day and the stability. Then he goes into, has a real quick bite of rice, beans, or sorghum, which is all they have in this world, a little bit of coffee, and then he goes right into rounds. And he will be in rounds for anywhere from 10, 12 hours to see all these people. Then he goes into, then he has a clinic that he holds another 50, 60, 100 people that he'll see. And then he's the hospital director. So he has to take care of the hospital. And that is, you know, overwhelming. And throw in surgeries. He has 2 or 3 days of nothing but surgery all day long. This man is, he's a hero. This is service like you've never seen. So
sounds like it's almost like his heart is a mom raising 3 kids who goes from thing in the morning to night without a moment of rest.
Amen to that. It is overwhelming just to be there and to follow him with a camera. I was exhausted. But keep in mind, he's dealing with amputations here, lacerations there. Then he's got to climb up a ladder and clean off the solar panels, so they have electricity the next day. I mean, he is all in. The buck stops there with Tom Katina, and he does this with a smile and with a skip in his step. He feels like he is doing the right thing, and there's nothing to do with martyrdom. He's not pious, and he's not. You know, he's not one to proselytize. He focuses on the work and does that day in, day out. And this has been for 10 years now, and he rarely leaves. It's beyond anything I've ever witnessed. I'm exhausted just talking about it now, but this is a friend of mine, so it's very personal, and I want to make sure I got this story out there because these people are in great need, and he needs to have some attention for what he's doing because he's my buddy, and this conflict needs to be resolved, and so that's the effort that's the reason why I put so much effort.
Give us a sense of what are the main diseases? What are the main health problems? Is there potable water there? Hygiene? What is the kind of what's the environment in that part of the world that kind of some of the health issues, the sickness issues, are kind of operating in with the people who are there?
Well, if having bombs weren't being dropped on you enough, these people live in a very difficult part of the world to survive just day in, day out. There's famine, there's drought, there's cholera, there's malaria. They had a huge outbreak of measles while we were there. 1,500 kids came into the hospital, 1,500, and that's just the kids that could get, or the parents that could get the kids into the hospital. So you're dealing with a part of the world that has no medical care, no vaccines, nothing. So this is, I mean, you're talking about a base level. You got to start there and think that it's a very difficult part of the world to just simply live in and to survive. And then you throw the warfare, you know, on top of it. It's overwhelming. So these people have a difficult go of it each and every day. Without Omar Hassan al-Bashir picking on them, that's for sure. But then there's one guy that steps up, and there's one guy that understands how to keep this part of the world, these people healthy, and it's Dr. Tom Katina.
Now, the hospital was there before he went there 10 years ago?
Yes. Now the Catholic Church, through Bishop Maxim Gassis, he figured out this part of the world was needed water. He always says they don't need churches right now. They don't need sanctuaries. They need water, and water is means life. And so he created a program and put in wells around all over this area, and then built schools and this hospital. And so that was the way that he wanted to combat the difficult times there. So that's what he did. And the church is responsible for all of the movement, the transportation of goods in and out, responsible for raising all of the money there. I can just tell you right now, the good that the Catholic Church does in this area is remarkable. I mean, absolutely remarkable. Without it, there'd be significant loss of life. So that's how Dr. Tom is able to operate, if you will. Because the Catholic Church initially created this hospital and, like I said, created these wells and gave these people an opportunity that no one else would.
So, Ken, you created this film. So what are you hoping to achieve by this film?
Well, I want to hold Omar Hassan al-Bashir feet to the fire. I want to make sure that he understands that we're out here, that we are aware of what's going on. And so what we have already achieved, I got to let you know, long story short, we were able to get the film, The Heart of Nuba, into the hands of Bashir. And he saw the film, and the quote that he's given us is the primary reason for us declaring a ceasefire is because of the film. So because we made this film, because Dr. Tom is doing such illuminating work there, we were able to help create a ceasefire where people aren't living in foxholes anymore, living in fear. And I must say that there have been so many organizations, Amnesty International, Act for Sudan, Human Rights Watch, Enough Project, so many that have come before us. Dr. Tom and Ryan Boyett of Nuba Reports, a lot of people that have done incredible work there. We are standing on the shoulders of these people. What we were able to achieve, a tipping point. So right now, for the last 13 months, there has been a ceasefire, and people are living a very different life because of it now. So I can tell you right now, the difference that we have made because we have made this film is incredible.
Well, Ken, I just want to thank you, Ken, for taking the time to be with us on Just Love during this Easter week. And I want to thank you for making the film The Heart of Nuba. It opens during this Easter week. And so I just hope that a lot of people see it. And really, congratulations not merely on the film, but on the effect that it has had for in making people's lives a little bit safer. So, Ken Carlson, thank you for being with us on Just Love. Ken Carlson is the director, the producer, and the independent filmmaker who is with Carlson Films, and he has made the film The Heart of Nuba, which kind of recounts the work of a heroic doctor, Dr. Tom Katena, who is working in the Sudan in a situation which there's very, very little medical care there, and was dealing with a lot of the political turmoil that is there, which at least, thank God, there's a ceasefire for at least the time being. And the film is called The Heart of Nuba, which opens during Easter week. And so I'd encourage our listeners, go see it, see the work of somebody who is heroically helping others in a distant part of the world, and maybe we'll all be a little bit more inspired to do those things that will make our world better. So this is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just. It will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Hallelujah. It is the Easter season. Jesus Christ is risen, has transformed death into new life, and I don't think there's ever a time when that is not the most magnificent proclamation there could be. But, you know, some years it seems there's a lot more Good Friday around us. That is, a lot more evidences of things gone wrong, a little bit more evidence of evil. And so Easter takes on an incredible impetus and power. And I think this year is one of them. So so this is our Easter week. And this Easter week, again, is one of those times in which, you know, we look back 50 years ago, was a time when, tragically, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis. And, you know, I took part in a Passover Seder this past week in Memphis in kind of commemoration of that. I was invited by a Jewish colleague as part of the Jewish labor movement to participate in that kind of Passover Seder that was there on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And why don't we listen to a little piece from the speech he gave the night before he was assassinated.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
It is actually incredibly moving to be in a place where those events happened. And, you know, when that assassination occurred, I was just about 18 years old. I was graduating from high school. And I remember, oh, a few months after the tragic assassination, and also the same year, the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, when he was campaigning for president, who was assassinated in a kitchen in Los Angeles. And as I was graduating from high school, I remember that his body was lying wake in state at St. Patrick's Cathedral there. And it was kind of a very, very moving event. And so, you know, earlier this week to be in Memphis on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, was very, very moving. And, you know, and all of these issues kind of come together from our Catholic perspective. You know, we don't believe in a single idea of what of an area that is justice. We don't only believe in justice relates to civil rights and racial equality. We believe it deals with economic justice and fairness. We deal in peace and injustice in those areas. We believe that justice relates to the life of a child in the womb of his or her mother. We believe that justice relates to how we treat people at the very end of their lives. And, you know, from our Catholic perspective, you know, maybe nobody agrees with us that it has to do with, you know, an unborn child, that has to do with a young child, that has to do with a family struggling, it has to do with a refugee that's fleeing from another country. But from our perspective, all of that kind of fits together. They're not all the same issues, no way, but they all kind of fit together in respect for human life. And basically, I'm sorry, if anybody wants to criticize us, I just refer them to the first book of the Bible. And I say that, you know, God decided that he was going to put his very own image and likeness into every person, male and female. And so who are we to not respect that human life that is in every person, and whether it is in the life of a refugee, whether it is in the life of a homeless person, whether it be a struggling mom trying to raise her kids by herself, all of that, we believe, comes under that purview of the dignity of the human person and our need to respect the image of God that is in each of us. So anyway, so that's this is a little bit, it's a happy week. It's a joyous week because it's Easter, but there's still some things that we recall, and we still have a job to do to make sure that the risen Lord is even alive in our world. And there's a lot of work for us to do. But, you know, if I could take a moment, I mean, you know, Easter week has a lot to do with you know, children and Marion, did you see any Easter eggs this past Easter?
So we actually had a little Easter egg hunt in my own home with four little munchkins. So
okay, did anybody help? So tell us a little bit. Do Easter eggs kind of? I do think we don't see the relationship between Easter eggs and Easter Jesus. There's a lot. Of comparisons and contrast. So don't they go along the ground? Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, so fathers help their children roll Easter eggs along the ground.
But did you know that it was the father of Jesus who rolled away the stone and raised his son Jesus from the ground of the tomb? See that?
Pretty similar.
How about the colors of Easter eggs? Tell me about the colors of Easter eggs.
Easter eggs come in many different colors.
Ah, but Easter Jesus, he comes and saves people of every single color. So he doesn't eliminate any colors at all. What about, but aren't, you know, how those Easter eggs are hard, aren't they?
Well, yeah, Easter eggs are supposed to be hard boiled.
Well, you know what? When life around us is hard boiled, the love of Easter Jesus can be soft and cuddly. So I kind of like that. That's good. But what about the shells of Easter eggs?
So Easter egg shells crack, and then we throw them away because they're imperfect and not pretty enough for us.
Not so Jesus, because Easter Jesus embraces our cracks and considers everyone pretty enough to be loved and share in his new risen life. But sometimes Easter eggs, like, do we eat them?
We do. Easter eggs get mixed and mashed up. They get put in egg salad. You can eat them in the middle of the day.
Well, Easter Jesus, he nourishes us in the transformation of bread and wine into the meal of the Eucharist.
So many similarities.
Yep. But, so where do we find Easter eggs? Where are they?
So sometimes Easter eggs are in plain sight with just a little bit of camouflage.
Just like Easter Jesus. He's right in front of us. But we do need to pause and open our eyes to see Easter Jesus. But the Easter eggs aren't always in front of us, are they?
No, not at all. I had a big hunt at my house. And sometimes they're hidden. They're hidden. You have to look really hard to find them.
You know what? That's just like Easter Jesus. Because sometimes he's hidden in out-of-the-way places and he shows up in really strange people. We have to look hard to find him, but it's worth the hunt.
So this is personal, Monsignor Sullivan, but I don't like hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah, but I do like Jesus. But Easter eggs, they don't do much, do they?
No, they just lay there. They don't do anything unless we pick them up and do something with them.
But Easter Jesus, risen from the dead, he doesn't wait for us. He searches us out, even when we act like Easter eggs and just lay there and don't do much. Now tell me, these Easter eggs, how about their shape?
Well, they're all the same shape.
But not Easter Jesus, because he comes to us with love and new life that's customized for our own individual shapes and sizes. Now, finally, are all these Easter eggs real?
All right, I'm going to admit to something, Monsignor. I actually bought some plastic Easter eggs. They're imposters. They were pretty tacky.
Yuck. But Easter Jesus. Never tacky, never plastic. He's the real thing. Every day, until forever, alleluia for Easter Jesus. Let's take a break. This is Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome to Just Love. This is Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world from the perspective of our Catholic wisdom. How we look at what's going on in our world and how we try to understand it a little better in order that we might be a little bit inspired to live our lives in a way that creates a world that is more just and more compassionate. And as we say all the time, the simple way to do that is if you figure out how to love God more, to love your neighbor more, and love yourself more. If we all did that, and I said just yesterday, there are about 1.6 billion Christians in the world. Can you imagine if we did that, how just and how compassionate our world would be? Boy, that is certainly something that we should strive for during this Easter season. And as Paul said to the Corinthians, if we want to know where to start, a little bit of sincerity and a little bit of truthfulness, and that'll take us a long way to making the risen Jesus more present in the world around us. But Easter, spring, March, they all kind of come together in different ways. And what that means is March madness. What it also means is spring training. And those football guys have to take a break for a while. And so we focus on basketball and baseball. But today we're going to spend a lot of time on basketball with Tom Kuchowski, who is a basketball scout and who is delight and who I'm delighted is going to be our guest right now on Just Love. Tom Kuchowski, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love during this Easter week.
My pleasure, Monsignor.
So, tell me, How'd you get into the scouting business? You're so tall. Why don't you just play basketball as opposed to scout everybody else playing basketball?
Well, Monsignor, the most athletic thing I've ever done in my life is jump to a conclusion.
Ah!
I tried, but I wasn't very good. I had an older brother, Steve, who's a basketball coach in Canada, and he was a good player. But I wasn't. But I was always a basketball junkie, and we always went to the every Thursday night to the college doubleheaders at the old Garden, 50th and 8th Avenue, not the one on.
All right. So now, Tom, here, so let me tell you that.
It just got into my blood, and I loved it, and I feel fortunate that I'm able to do basketball for a living.
So, Tom, let me tell you a little bit of my own story. I played basketball in high school, not too good, but I played. You know, we had a good time. Wasn't, you know, Division AAA. We just played with our other teams. But one of the things that they kind of let us do back in those old days, which was the 19th century, was that they would have some of the high school games before the professional Knick games at the Old Garden. So I actually played basketball for 13 seconds in the Old Garden before one of those Knick games. I remember it to this day. It was like 50 years ago, but I remember it to this day.
It's Monsignor, it's quality, not quantity, that counts. I'm sure you made the most of those 13 seconds. And who'd you play against? You were playing for Cathedral.
Right.
And who were you playing against?
Oh, I think maybe St. Raymond's, but I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. But I can tell you, I didn't commit a foul, and I didn't do anything bad. I don't know, do anything good, but at least I didn't do anything bad in those 13
well, that,
seconds.
Monsignor, that augured well for your future career.
thank you so much. So anyway, tell us a little bit about, sports has changed over the years that you've been doing this stuff. It's really pretty different now than it was 50 years ago, isn't it?
Well, the game has changed and has gone through many different reincarnations. It's not the game today is not the game that it was 20 years ago. Even on the NBA level, if you watch tape of NBA games 20 years ago, and 20 years ago wasn't the same as the game in the 60s and 70s, and the game in the 70s wasn't the same as the game in the 50s. So it has undergone many reincarnations. But what I think has been permanent, more so than even the way the game, the style of play, is the values of sport. And that's what I think is a lot more important. Hopefully the values of sport perdure long after the fundamentals of sport are forgotten. And sport teaches, it builds character, it also reveals character. And some people, if you have holes in your character, that's going to be revealed. But it builds these virtues of hard work and discipline and sacrifice and teamwork and respect for authority for your coaches and your teammates and your opponents. And hopefully it has a carryover effect for the rest of the lives of these young people who play the game.
So, okay, you spoke about those issues, those values. You watch a game, you watch basketball, you hear about different things. Is there really much value in basketball these days?
Well, I think there's value in sport, and I think it teaches young kids how to deal with adversity. And, you know, they're not, their lives aren't going to be an uninterrupted succession of successes. And when you learn how to lose, and when you're 10 years old, losing a basketball game or a baseball game is a big thing to you. And usually it brings forth tears and whatever, but you learn how to deal with that. Then later on in life, when real adversity strikes, you've been prepared for that.
Tom, interestingly, just about 3 weeks ago or so, I was at the CYO championship games up in Mount St. Michael School, which is one of the high schools in the New York area. And I was there and I was giving out trophies to the team that we gave out caps to the teams that won, teams that lost. And I had forgotten what you just said, because when the losing team came up, boy, and these seventh grade kids, and there were tears in their eyes that they had just lost this game. And it kind of reminded me how serious kind of kids take sporting and taking winning.
Well, it's really important, and it's, you know, to be good at anything, you have to give it more value than it has on its own. And I think a game has been defined as an activity which brings entertainment and competition without having any real value beyond itself. And if you want to be a good basketball player, you've got to make it, even though when you sit back, you realize there are a lot more important things in life. But if you really want to be good, you have to invest more value in it than it really has on its own. And, you know, kids, the fact that they do cry when they lose means it matters to them. And, I mean, everything we do, we're supposed to do as if it matters. I mean, that's what our Lord has commanded us. And, you know, he wants us to try to be the best at whatever we do. If you keep let's say the manager of the team who keeps the scorebook, or the manager of the team who sweeps the gym, we're to do everything to the best of our ability.
Well, you know, Tom, interestingly, it reminds me, because this week we celebrate tragically the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And one of his, I thought, most poignant phrases is that if you are a street sweeper, you should sweep those streets with the same way that Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel. It was just a poignant, and I probably have missed the quote perfectly, but I think it's another way of saying what you just said, that whatever we do, we should do to the best of our ability.
We've got to realize, Mancini, the dignity of work. And it doesn't matter whether you're a CEO of a major corporation, or whether you sweep office buildings, or whatever you do, if you work for the John Doe Fund and clean up around Grand Central Station, you do it to the best of your ability. And that's all that God asks of us.
So, okay, let's go a little bit further. So, I mean, obviously we're March Madness is a critical thing, even though it spills over into April. And I got to tell you, I just think I'm mad at Major League Baseball because the October Classic now ends in November. You can't do that. I mean, we don't need 27 playoff games in order to figure out who's the best. So anyway, but that's a little bit of my thing. But anyway, so March Madness. So give me your take on Sister Jean.
She's a rock star. She is the hero of the NCAA tournament. And I haven't seen the Nielsen ratings for Saturday's games, but I would bet that they were much higher than the last few years. And but you know, even 98-year-old nuns can't pull the team through. And, no, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And you know, it was 55 years ago when Loyola won the national championship in '63. That was the first NCAA final that was ever televised. It wasn't televised on network television. It was televised on WPIX, Channel 11. Les Kida did the play-by-play, and they beat Cincinnati, two-time defending champions, who had a 14-point lead with 11 minutes to go, and then they started, there was no shot clock back then, they started nursing the lead, and that backfired, and they ended up losing in overtime. And they had two New Yorkers who started for Loyola Chicago. Jerry Harkness, the star of their team from DeWitt Clinton in the Bronx, and Ron Miller, a junior from Christopher Columbus in the Bronx.
Yeah.
But now the final we have a Catholic school, Villanova, an Augustinian school, against Michigan, a state university, but is coached by John Beilein, who is a Daily Communicant. So I don't know if Sister Jean's magic will rub off on John Beilein or not. But if it's not as if Michigan wins, and then Villanova's probably a big favorite, and both teams really live and die by the three. So I think it depends on which teams are hitting their three, which of the two teams hitting their three. In the semifinal, when they demolished Kansas, Villanova set a Final Four record with 18 threes they made. They were 13 for 26 in the first half and 18 for 40 overall.
So did you see, I'm sure you saw the piece recently by Mark Tracy that talked about why Catholic colleges excel at basketball?
I didn't see it.
Ah, it was in the New York Times sometime in the past past week or so, and a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but there's a little bit of seriousness there because he talked about, and this is very, very relevant to me, is that one of the things about Catholic colleges is that very early on, they were open to the poor, they were open to people of all races, and they began attracting a lot of people who were good basketball players. And because they were open to a diverse student body. And that's one of the serious pieces in the point. And I think, you know, not inappropriate that was there. And, you know, we all know the story of Holy Cross and how that was an important place where Afro-American young men were provided the opportunity to go to college there. So I thought it was a kind of an interesting piece that was a little bit fun, but also a little bit serious at the same time.
Well, I think one of the points, and I didn't read the article, but one of the reasons why Catholics gravitated towards basketball and were good at basketball is because, you know, it started out, it was more of an urban game.
Right.
When you go into the inner cities, you don't have expansive fields for baseball or football or soccer or lacrosse, but because of the population density. But you do have, let's say in a housing project, you might not even have a full court, but you have a basket.
Right. And also,
the Catholic population of the country was mainly urban.
Right.
So I think Catholics really started, and the people who first grew the game in the early part of the 20th century really were the Jews with the settlement houses, but in the urban areas. But I think most of the Catholic population was centered in the cities rather than rural. And I think that also is had something to do with it.
And basketball is not terribly expensive to play.
No.
And that's, you know, you don't need a lot of equipment. Maybe you need some sneakers. You got to find a basketball someplace, and someplace there's a hoop someplace, and that's about it. And you got a game. It's not, you don't need a lot of equipment like skiing. You don't need equipment like lacrosse or things like that. And that may be another reason which led to it being such a popular sport.
I would agree, Mancini. Yeah.
Hey, Tom Kuchowski, basketball scout, thanks so much for spending the time with us today on Just Love and sharing a little bit of your insights into the importance of sports and the values it brings to helping people kind of negotiate life because of the commitment, the discipline that it breaks. So thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Monsignor.
So we are in Easter week, and we are you know, celebrating the risen Lord, and we're celebrating the fact that Jesus is risen from the dead, and we're doing it not naively, but we're doing it in the midst of a world in which there are a number of things that are not going well. And one of the things was so hopeful to me in this past week when I read about the Easter Vigil ceremony in Rome, in which Pope Francis baptized, welcomed into the church, a Nigerian refugee. But the thing that was so impressive about it is that this Nigerian refugee was raised up because he stopped a crime, that there was a crime going on in one of the stores, I think, in Rome, and he prevented it, and he risked his own life by tackling and holding down the person who had, you know, perpetrated the crime until the police could come. Now, he was a little bit nervous because he was a refugee and, you know, came into Italy fleeing from his own country. And so he didn't have all of the right documents. And so he was a little concerned that by this happening, that he would maybe be deported. And the reality is that, you know, they discovered who he did and they basically said, we're going to figure out how we can do this right. And so the Pope invited him, you know, to be baptized. And I believe he was preparing for baptism anyway. I don't know that part of it. Somebody may know more than me. But this was a refugee who basically did this heroic act. And I was just a few weeks ago at a funeral in the Bronx in New York City of another refugee who came from Africa, from Ghana. And he gave his life because he rescued people from a burning building in the Bronx when there was this fire that killed 13. He saved some of the others so there weren't additional people being killed. Again, a refugee. He was also in the armed services of the United States. And I mention this up because that is one of the, I think, very, very hopeful situations in our world. Almost by definition, refugees are in difficult situations. Yet they can bring life, they bring hope to the world, and they serve as an inspiration for us. So thank you for being with us on Just Love during this Easter week, the octave of Easter, and live in accord with the risen Lord, truthfulness, sincerity. Thanks for being with us. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.